listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's good to have with us Patrick Dunleavy, the former Deputy Inspector General for the New York State Department of Corrections, a man who has personal firsthand knowledge as a result of his career in the correction system, as well as his serious study of it now in the private sector, notably working for Steve Emerson at the Investigative Project on Terrorism, about what I call jihad in jail. He has described it brilliantly in his book, The Fertile Soil of Jihad, Terrorism's Prison Connection. I'm thrilled that he is a professor at the terrorism for a class on terrorism at the United States Military Special Operations School, an outfit that can greatly benefit from his insights in all of these matters, and as do we when he is able to visit with us. Patrick, thank you so much for taking a few minutes. Good to have you with us.
My pleasure, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Well, you have been on this case for a long time, and you've brought to the fore recently in a piece that you wrote for the Investigative Project on Terrorism, the sort of case study of a fellow by the name of Edwin Lorenzo Lemons. Talk a little bit about him, Patrick, and why he's sort of a poster child of a problem that isn't getting the attention it requires.
Well, the thing that's intriguing about Edwin is that he fits the pattern that we've seen over the years of an individual who's ripe for radicalization. His criminal history started when he was a teenager. He wound up in prison in New York for committing crimes of robbery. When he was there, he came in and declared his religion as Christian. Shortly thereafter, after meeting two individuals from the Middle East in the prison mosque, he converted to Islam, went on to study Arabic, went on to be paroled and go to the Islamic Center in Gainesville, Florida. And then from there, this kid, this poor African-American kid who never ventured outside of a small rural town in New York, suddenly became an international traveler. He got on flights going to Jordan, to Egypt, to Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Middle East.
We're talking about one Edwin Lorenzo Lemons, also known as Asad al-Salam. And you were telling us about his travels overseas. What did he do in some of these Middle Eastern countries, Patrick?
Well, he attended madrasas that were tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. He also, and this is according to our source who knew both him and individuals in the Middle East, he received underground tactical training. We listened to him on tape conversations talking about his extremism. He even admitted to having extreme Islamic views on taped conversations. He was observed by the Joint Terrorism Task Force in Florida at a firing range, firing AK-47s and SKS assault weapons and practicing a tactical technique known as cover and concealment. He was coming back from one trip from Egypt. And when Lemons got off of an airplane at the Orlando airport, he was arrested by the Joint Terrorism Task Force and sentenced to a period of 27 months in a federal prison. After that, he, in the supervised release, somehow he wound up in Virginia as a member of the Muslim Chaplain Services of Virginia, and he became a licensed clergyman, licensed to perform weddings and also to minister to inmates. He was receiving a statewide institution pass to go to all the Virginia Department of Corrections institutes and teach inmates Arabic. This radicalized former inmate is now a chaplain for the whole Virginia Department of Corrections. It's incredible.
This is unfortunately not an isolated incident. As I understand it, Patrick Dunleavy, going back to the Clinton administration, a prominent Muslim Brotherhood operative, actually associated with al-Qaeda as well, by the name of Abdurrahman Alamoudi, was given the initial responsibility to help establish facilities for the recruitment, the training, and credentialing of chaplains for the U.S. prison and, by the way, the U.S. military. It seems as though, as you talk about in your piece at the Investigative Project on Terrorism, this is a classic example of having foxes in one of the most dangerous hen houses you can imagine.
Yeah, and this whole issue, as you talk about, the unvetted radical clergy entering into correctional institutions or into military institutions has been known. The Department of Justice Inspector General's office put out a report that's recommended vetting them, extreme vetting, using not only security, but actually questioning their ideology before they were hired. And the National Joint Terrorism Task Force, which is overseen by the FBI, was charged with that particular issue when it came to corrections. So how Virginia would have allowed this individual in without at least, if they would have done a simple Google search, let alone a criminal history or any other type of background vetting, they would have seen the history that he has with radical Islamic ideology. It's just mind-boggling.
Even if we can't figure this out for ourselves, looking at what has been happening in Europe, which is, unfortunately for them, farther along in much of this than we are, it's unmistakable that the kind of warnings you've issued about jihadism in our jails is translating into really insurgencies in some of these Western European countries in particular, where we've witnessed a growing tendency towards real violence being unleashed on the streets. You've made recommendations as to what should be done by most especially the Virginia Department of Corrections, but more generally, to try to prevent this sort of thing from persisting in this country. Go over those with us quickly, if you would.
Well, one of the things we said is that we go back to the recommendations of the Inspector General, which was the vetting of religious volunteers as well as hired clergy to do security backgrounds that not only looked at prior criminal history, but looked at their social media activity. We know that a lot of individuals have espoused radical views on social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or something like that. So that has to be done. Surely talking to someone about their ideology is not a violation of their religious rights. If you're going to come in and teach inmates your particular ideology, well, then we need to know what it is. And the other thing is to know what organizations they belong to. For instance, in this Muslim Chaplain Services of Virginia, we found that they were tied to the Islamic Relief, which was a charity that had ties not only to the Muslim Brotherhood, but it was found later on to have funded Hamas. And in fact, the United Arab Emirates declared them to be a terrorist group. So those type of associations are the type of things that have to be done in the vetting too. What groups?
And you know, one other particularly important point that you made, Patrick Dunleavy, was you need to go audit as well the people who have been trained by these individuals. You know, what are they up to, either in the prison system or most especially if they've gotten out?
Sure. For 2 years, Edwin Lemons has been teaching inmates in Virginia. Many of those inmates have probably been released. Who are those inmates? Where did they go from their prison sentence to what places in the United States, what particular religious organizations or groups that they join? Yeah, that has to be done.
Yeah. We have to leave it at that for the moment. Patrick Dunleavy, this is such important work. I cannot thank you enough for what you've done in the correction system yourself and what you're doing now to try to make sure that it's protecting us as well as ensuring that the problems do not become even greater inside the system. Keep it up, my friend, at the Investigative Project on Terrorism and with the Special Operations Command. It's incredibly important. We're grateful to you for sharing your time with us. Next up, we'll talk with Bill Gertz. We'll get our weekly tour with him inside the ring right after this.